Hello, my name is Phil Mack, and I'm here to tell you about a new and different kind of show coming to WHFR called Thematic. It's on every Thursday morning from 10 until noon. Since music is a universal language, let's see if that holds true by looking at different musical styles on selected themes. Each week, there will be songs from different genres that express their viewpoint on that theme. There will also be a weekly artist showcase, and of course, plenty of variety. It's a new way of looking at music. So on every Thursday morning, from 10 until noon, it's Thematic. 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 Organizing music for you, one song at a time. On WHFR, the only station making waves.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Good afternoon. This is Lynn, your host of Impact, and we're here with a wonderful group of ladies from the BCCCP, which stands for the Breast and Cervical Cancer Control Program, along with a representative from Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. And we're going to be talking about a lot of prevention and some wonderful projects coming up in this area. And at this point, I would like to inform you that the views expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR nor Henry Ford Community College. And we'd like to thank in advance Mike Holloway for engineering this program. So ladies, welcome. I think the best thing I can do is let you introduce yourselves, and I'll start with you.
I'm Barbara Eskridge with the BCCCP program.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Braddox, and I am the Breast Cancer Program Specialist for the Susan G. Komen Detroit Race for the Cure, locally presented by the Barbara Ann Kermanis Cancer Institute.
And Ellery Watkins from the BCCCP program.
Okay, welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is exciting. There's a lot of I've talked to Barb in the past, and a lot in the past. Actually, we used to work together back in the days when dinosaurs roamed the earth and you know, that sort of thing. And it was great to find out that after the place we worked, you're doing such a wonderful give back to society with this particular job. So, tell us a little bit about what the Breast and Cervical Cancer Control Program is all about.
Well, then first, after leaving corporate America, after being a breast cancer survivor twice and volunteering with the Breast and Cervical Cancer Control Program, you feel you want to give back. And that's 10 years ago we just figured out. Mm-hmm. So the program's for women who are between the age of 40 and 64 who are uninsured. And they haven't received their cancer screenings due to many circumstances, mainly because of health care. And not wanting to burden their family in fear, but this program is to cover them. If they contact us, I'm going to start giving you the number now, ladies, so get your phone, get your pencil out. If you call 1-888-242-2702, we can offer you, if you're uninsured between 40 and 64, your breast care, meaning clinical breast exams, mammogram follow-up test. And also we can offer you your pap smears and pelvic exams and follow-up test. And if you're diagnosed, we can also get you treated right away. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a great fear of a lot of women. If they find something, what will I do? But we're going to cover you 100%. So we're going to repeat this number again very shortly. We receive state funds and federal funds for this program. And a wonderful, wonderful grant from Susan G. Komen, Detroit Race for the Cure, to cover our ladies in the gaps that we find. Kerman's Cancer Institute, they administer the funds. They make sure that every nickel, dime, and penny goes to the purpose it was meant for. And that's what they do. They cover us. We have no fancy vacations, none of that. It all goes to you ladies. It all goes to saving lives. So that's what it's all about.
How many women would you estimate in the Detroit area are without health insurance and who are avoiding, if you will, getting the exam, because these are expensive tests?
Well, there are, I would say, close to probably 350,000 uninsured people mm-hmm. Within the greater metropolitan Detroit area. Mm-hmm. So there's the need is so great. And we know that early detection is key to surviving breast cancer. And, you know, of course, all types of cancer, but breast cancer, when it's caught early in its earliest stages, the 5-year survival rate is 98%. And we've come a long way since the early 80s, when a lot of the media started to raise awareness and different organizations started to talk about breast cancer in the media. Back then, the 5-year survival rate, when it was caught at its earliest stages, was only about 74%. Mm-hmm. But now we can proudly say that it's not a death sentence anymore.
Right.
And
right.
We're close to getting to 100%, I would say, with all of the awareness and all of the concentrated efforts in fundraising and all of the work that's being done by Carmanis and by organizations like Komen, mm-hmm. who are out there every day calling attention to this issue.
Right. I had no idea that the cure rate was that high. That's incredibly impressive.
And that's, of course, at its earliest stages. Of course, you know, when it's spread beyond the initial site, the survival rate does drop mm-hmm. dramatically. Mm-hmm. But that's why, you know, the BCCP and programs like it are so important.
Right, right. That puts breast cancer in as an early detected cancer. That puts it right up there with skin cancer, which is considered one of the most curable.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And, you know, comparable with colon cancer,
right.
too, in terms of removing polyps and things mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, early detection is key. We cannot emphasize that enough, and it's so important for women to have access to those timely screenings.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, how are you getting out the word? This is open to anybody. I didn't know anything about this. I found Barb at Concert of Colors last summer, and she was next to a poet, a dancing poet,
yes.
And so it was interesting all the way around the loop of the Max Fisher, but she was there. And she was passing the word then. How else are you getting out the word? And how are you trying to make people aware, women aware, to get these screenings?
Well, Lynn, when I was diagnosed in 1992 with breast cancer, I knew literally nothing about the disease. You know, you hear about it, but you never think it's going to happen to you.
Right.
And since then, you know, I think as a result of BCCP, we're out in the community. You can find us at Walmart, Kmart, DTE, different churches, different health fair. And I think as a whole, people talk about breast cancer more now, and they're more aware of it. Like when I was diagnosed, especially in the African-American community, you know, there were a lot of people who were survivors that did not talk about it. So we're just encouraging one woman talk to another woman about the disease and how important it is, like Lisa said. Early detection saves lives. And, you know, in certain communities, there's all types of myths about breast cancer, you know. There's a myth that, you know, if I do the screening and I get the surgery and they open it up and cancer's exposed to air, you're going to die. But cancer is no longer a death sentence. Early detection saves lives. So basically, that's what we promote, and we spread the word everywhere we go.
How did you find out that you had it?
I was just doing what they told me I should do once I turned 40.
Okay.
Had my yearly screening. At the time that I was diagnosed, I did not know there was a history of breast cancer in my family. So when I asked my mom, I says, well, does anyone in the family have breast cancer? She says, oh, no, no one has cancer. Little did I know, I was 6 years out, 6 year survivor, and we were just talking in general. And she said, you know, I believe Mama had something like that. I said, like what? She said, I believe they called it breast cancer. I said, well, was it breast cancer? Well, you know, I don't know. They took her breast off. Little did I know, after, you know, you start to talk and investigate, I had aunts on my father's side who was a breast cancer survivor, who to this day, they do not talk about it. On my mother's side, there were breast cancer survivors. No one talked about it. You know, after I was diagnosed, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer at 72 the first time. And it just so happened, you know, my sister took her grocery shopping every week, and she was getting this Neosporin antibiotic cream. And my sister says, Mom, why do you keep buying that? She said, well, you know, I got this little pimple on my breast, and it won't go away. And then my sister said, well, we have to go and get a mammogram. She was diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, she knew that I was a survivor, but she failed to have her mammogram for 2 years because she says, well, I just knew I was going to have it because you had it. Just lack of knowledge. And I lost her 4 years ago to breast cancer at 82.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just being aware, talking about it, doing the yearly screens, we cannot impress how important that is. And we need to talk to each other, especially family members. You need to know your history because, you know, if you don't know there's a family history, you have no knowledge of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So even your grandmothers, mothers, daughters, sisters, we need to talk about it.
Now, had you known in advance when you were a little bit younger about all this family history that came out after the fact?
Well, you know, I probably would have insisted on getting a mammogram probably earlier.
Sure.
You know, now,
yeah.
My daughter had her first mammogram at 25,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the strong family history. I have the sister that's next to me just had a double mastectomy on March 28th of this year as preventive. Because the doctor said it wasn't a case of if she was going to have it. It was just a matter of when.
Really?
And my baby sister was diagnosed 2 years ago with breast cancer. She had a double mastectomy and reconstructive surgery. But all is doing well.
Right.
And that falls in the line of knowing the family history and, you know, getting your screening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How can a doctor be so certain that it's going to happen? Is that just based on family
well,
history?
Well, because she'd had several breast surgeries.
Okay.
Okay. And her risk factor was so high. And there were some little abnormal cells floating around.
Oh, okay.
And so he just advised, just remove them, do the reconstructive surgery. And that increased her rate of not having breast cancer by 85%.
Wow.
Mm.
And I would just like to kind of add to that, I mean, add on to what Elroy was saying, the importance of knowing your family history. But in addition, I think it's important to know and understand that the majority of women who are diagnosed with breast cancer have no family history. It's about 80 to 90% of them who have no family history of the disease. And one day they discover that they have breast cancer through routine screening, or they discover a change in their breast. So it's kind of a twofold. You
mm-hmm.
do need to know your family history.
Right.
And, you know, Elroy is a shining example of that. I know that she is such a champion of that and does a wonderful job of getting the word out about knowing your family history and really just explaining why that's so important. But it's also important for women to know what the normal look and feel of their breast is so that they can report any changes to their doctors,
mm-hmm.
because many of us who are diagnosed do not have a family history. My mother is an example of that, and unfortunately she lost her battle 5 years ago to the disease, but
Sorry.
No family history at all.
Right.
And you know, it's sometimes, you know, to the doctors who are, you know, working with the breast cancer patients and families of those patients, they sometimes are at a loss of explaining why, you know, to those who have no family history.
Right.
And, you know, that's why there's so much research
mm-hmm.
out there trying to figure out and kind of solve the mystery of why this disease continues to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about family history. Now, you mentioned that there was no family history in a number of these cases. Is it actually not there, or is it just not known?
It could be a little of both. In some cases, in some families, sure. like Ellery was talking about, people, you know, are not comfortable talking about their bodies, particularly with their children. And, you know, the lines of communications need to open up so that if there is a family history that exists, that everyone knows it and that they can take the appropriate measures, and talking to their doctors, opening up the lines of communication with their doctors as well, and the doctor can lead them to the right times to get their screenings, the appropriate screening tests, et cetera.
I'd like to add to that. I was diagnosed in 1989 the first time, and as far as I knew, there was no family history. I was the first one. But then again, you find in my case, and many others, you might not think so, they don't know all their family. They don't know this side of the family. I didn't know my father's side of the family. So when I connected with them not too many years ago, I find that I was the first one that they know of. So a lot of people we run across, they really don't know one side of the family or the other side of the family. And back in the day, my grandmother, I asked her something, everybody sort of lay down and died of pneumonia. So they never knew. It was never talked about. And I really didn't even want to tell her. I thought if I told her I had breast cancer, she'd be planning my funeral. But when I finally told her, she says, oh, that's nothing nowadays. So, you know, I was afraid to. We're afraid to tell our family. We refer to bread in our family. Just all sorts of... fear.
Yes. We got a lot of fear. And even, you know, I have girlfriends now, you know, when they haven't seen me for a while, before they even say, I've had my mammogram. Because they know that I'm going to ask.
And by us being in this program, when we first started, you know, I think people, when they saw us coming, they would say, oh my God, they're going to talk to us about mammograms. And we did. I guess they were afraid of, why is she calling me, you know? So.
Okay. Lifestyle also is an issue.
Yes,
are you addressing that at all? I mean, obviously, family, there's nothing you can do, but lifestyle, there are some things you can do.
Yes. I know that whenever I'm talking to people about breast cancer, whenever I'm out in the community giving a presentation, lifestyle does come up. We talk about risk factors. We just spend a great deal of time talking about family history, and those are the things that you can't control. But there are things, you know, those controllable things you need to know and understand, that these are things that are very small changes that you can make if you're not doing them right now. Small changes like incorporating exercise into your daily routine, eating healthy. Those are things that, small adjustments that can be made so that you can reduce your risk of developing breast cancer.
There's a, I understand there's a connection between drinking and lung cancer. So smoking is devastating for all organs, but as you said, a healthier lifestyle. Are there guides somewhere that can help people change their eating habits? Is there a website we could go to?
Of course, you can visit Komen.org for more information about risk factors in particular. There's actually what's called a risk matrix that you can just go down the list and see, you know, where you are in terms of your lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. Of course, there's a lot of government sponsored websites specifically about exercise, specifically about nutrition, you know, through the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institute of Health. There's so many resources out there. Of course, Carmanis is a great resource. And we just encourage everyone to just get all the knowledge that they can about disease.
I was looking at that web, and that is just page after page after page. Lots of good information.
And I might
out
add
there.
The number one risk factor is being a woman and getting older.
Two things that you can't change.
Certain things you just can't change.
With regards to the age factor, what kind of age are we talking about? I know that the target audience here is 40 to 64. So we're looking at past 40 as...
Well, we do know that the majority of cases, about probably 77% of breast cancers are diagnosed amongst women who are over 50 years of age. The standard screening guidelines call for a mammogram annually at age 40. Clinical breast exams every year at that point in time, too. But prior to that, we encourage every woman to get their clinical breast exams beginning at age 20, at least every 3 years, once every 3 years. It is, you know, a little bit... rarer to find a breast cancer in a younger woman, but it does happen. Matter of fact, my coworker, the Race for the Cure co-chair, her name is Katrina Stubbins, she was diagnosed at age 30 with breast cancer. And wow. There are cases where even in their 20s, mm-hmm. Women are finding out that they have been diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So it is something that everyone needs to be aware of in terms of maintaining their breast health and doing the things that they need to do, like getting those clinical breast exams, like living a healthy lifestyle, in order to, of course, reduce their risk of getting breast cancer. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just recently, I had a young lady that I thought was coming to our table to get information for someone else. And I said, my age group. And she said, well, I just wanted to get some information.
Okay.
So I asked her if she had a problem, because a lot of times we have a woman that she's younger, mm-hmm. and she has a lump or something, mm-hmm. then we thought to refer her to Carmanis for the Coleman Fund grant to mm-hmm. cover some of the younger women that have problems. But this young lady told me, I've had breast cancer at age 20, wow. the first time, stage 2, and now she was 23, and she's going through treatment now for stage 0. They found it because she was pregnant. They found it. So age, you know, the older we get, but let's not ignore
right.
The younger woman, too. She should be very aware of her body, what's going on. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're having a little technical situation here. All right. Okay. Well, my next question is with regards to the mammogram itself. There are bits of information out there that indicate there's a radiation risk when, and especially if you're doing it annually, every year you're getting that little punch of radiation, which could actually add to the risk, in addition to being, you know, part of the help. Any thoughts about that?
Well, mammography is the gold standard. It is the best screening tool that we do have mm-hmm. in detecting a breast cancer, especially at earliest stages. So, of course, the benefits of mammography, of annual mammography, far outweigh the risks. And there's ongoing research in terms of developing new screening mm-hmm. mechanisms for breast cancer that do not involve radiation, that involve other technologies, for example, like ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
But those are not in existence quite yet. They're
okay.
you know, going through the processes of being, you know, FDA approved and things of that nature. They're not quite developed all the way yet. So for now, mammography is the gold standard. It's the best tool that we do have in detecting
okay.
breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so important for women to follow those screening guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're always hopeful that new technologies and better technologies will come down the pipeline
right.
sooner
right.
than later.
I've also heard that the mammogram as it exists now, with even though there is the radiation factor, that it's a very, very low dose.
Yes.
So
that is correct.
Right.
So yeah, as I said, you know, the benefits far outweigh the risks.
Right.
In terms of being exposed to the radiation and going through the mammogram, and it's best to actually go in and get those screenings
mm-hmm.
As opposed to just taking your chances.
Okay. And if someone is interested in the BCCCP, or you said the BCCCP, what's that number again?
1-888-242-2702.
Okay.
Write it down, ladies. And I don't want you sitting at home saying, boy, I don't want to get anything free. It's not free. You already paid taxes. It's some of your money coming back to you. Don't sit there thinking that this is charity. It's not charity. This is money that's coming back to you that you've already given. I've heard all these stories about, I don't want to take any money. But, you know, if you need us, we're here for you. Please don't. Don't sit. Pick up the phone and call that number.
Okay. And we're going to take a little break. You are listening to Impact right here on WHFR Dearborn. We are the station making waves. Impact is a show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community on the fourth Tuesday of every month between 1 and 2 p.m. And we are back from that little bit of Regina Carter talking about great things going on in Detroit, the race for the cure. Regina Carter, it's all good. We were talking off air a little bit about the thermogram, which is another method of diagnosis in addition to the mammogram and the ultrasound. And I have had the ultrasound, and it's a lot less painful than the mammogram. Let's be honest about that part. Thermogram. What does the thermal do? It shows you a colorful picture. It kind of looks like
I've heard it. It's a thermal. I'm not sure what process, but they says no radiation. But if they see something or have suspicions of something, they're going to send you for a mammogram.
Mm-hmm.
Ultrasounds can find masses. But it might be a point they still have to have a mammogram after the ultrasound to cue in on something. Because I've seen my mammogram film, and mine just lit up like a little Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find the very tiniest seed or cell that's lit up on a mammogram. So if without it, I dare not say I wouldn't be here today. Because
okay.
I wasn't like my coworker and friend, El Ree. I didn't do a self-breast exam every month. I didn't do any of that because it couldn't happen to me, and I didn't think about it. Tell you the truth, I didn't think about it until Betty Ford came to me. How old I am? Let me be quiet. Oh my gosh, what am I revealing? When she came on TV, the first lady, and talked about having breast cancer and, of course, her addictions, who had ever done that before?
Mm-hmm.
It's always been a secret, such a secret. And I never forget that part of it. Yeah, and she was still living. Well, maybe I am going to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my doctor in the hospital, I said, I'm going to die. He says, no, yours is like Betty Ford. And already I felt better just to say, well, she's still around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, I'll be lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. He told me type 2. I thought he said diabetic, but he was saying stage 2. Because I didn't know anything about breast cancer and what to look for, what to expect. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned you seeing Betty Ford come out and talk about being a breast cancer survivor. And I think that that's one of the beautiful things about the Race for the Cure. There's so many people who are going through the exact same thing, that, you know, and of, you know, all points of the process, whether it's newly diagnosed or had it 20 years ago. And people who attend the Race for the Cure every year have the opportunity to celebrate that survivorship and to see people, if they're newly diagnosed. We have a lady that comes every year that was diagnosed over 50 years ago, and she's still here.
Wow.
And they have the opportunity to see her and to say, okay, yeah, I can beat this. And so, I mean, that just goes to show how far we've come in terms of raising awareness and in terms of kind of opening up the dialogue about this disease. It's not something that affects a very small amount of people, but it's something that has affected so many and can affect so many people that we know and we are acquainted with and that we love and care about.
Right.
I was diagnosed twice, 1989 and 2001. So I'm adding those together, 23 mm-hmm. years. But the second time, I knew I could beat it. You know, I'll say, what do we do and when can we do it?
Okay.
And I'm still here now. So awareness and seeing other people the day of the race is just the most emotional experience you ever had in your life.
And, I think it's so encouraging mm-hmm. when newly diagnosed patients come and see the survivors, because I know when I was diagnosed, you know, I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I had no knowledge, didn't know anything about breast cancer. So I was looking for people who had survived breast cancer, and each person that I encountered gave me hope. So in 1994 was my first Race for the Cure at the zoo.
Okay.
I went there looking for someone that looked like me who had survived breast cancer. To my surprise, there were 5 African-American women at that walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been around long enough to see thousands of women from every ethnic group surviving breast cancer. So it's so encouraging to see, you know, when you're going through that, you could just think of, I can't tell you the number of things that run through your mind. My first there, I hope I'm here to see my daughter graduate from high school. I've seen her graduate from college twice, you know. So it just makes newly diagnosed people feel better to see
right.
that, you know, I'm going to live too.
Right. Now, the Race for the Cure that you're involved with, Lisa, yes. is that strictly Detroit or is that in the Detroit area?
Well, Our service area that we focus in on is Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties. We have people from throughout metropolitan Detroit that come and join us. Last year, we had over 40,000 people come down to Comerica Park and join us for the race. We have people who travel, my family included. I'm not originally from this area. So my dad comes up from Ohio. My sister comes in from Minnesota. We have people who travel from across the state of Michigan to come and participate because it's just a wonderful, wonderful day, a wonderful experience, a wonderful occasion to celebrate survivorship of breast cancer.
And this goes on how long, the various races? Because I'm involved with one that doesn't happen until August.
Well, for the Common Detroit Race for the Cure, it's once a year. Mm-hmm. We have it every spring. It's not necessarily the same weekend every year. But this week, we are having the race on Saturday, May 26th, down at Comerica Park. Opening ceremonies start at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock is when the actual walk or runners will have the gun go off and they can do their race. And of course, all of those who are not runners, like myself, can, of course, join in the walk. 5K.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's a one-day event. And of course, there are various races throughout, actually around the world. There's a whole series of Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. It's about 140 of them worldwide.
Wow. Okay.
And I dare to brag that Detroit is one of the top tier races. So you're in for a treat if you decide to join us this Saturday. Registration is still open and available.
And is there a phone number? Or website or both?
Yes, there is both. Of course, Carmanis being our local presenting sponsor, they can call 1-800-CARMANIS and be referred to our office if they have questions. And of course, they can find our website, which is www.carmanos.org/Detroit Race for the Cure, mm-hmm. and just find all sorts of information, including, you know, how to register for the race and information just about breast cancer in general if they want to learn about that.
Okay. And again, about how many people are you expecting?
We reached that wonderful milestone of having 40,000 people. So that's what we're shooting to even shatter that record this weekend. And we're hoping that all the people who joined us last year will be able to join us this year and even some new people. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
And I'd like to add, it's the best party in town.
There you go.
So just come on down. You can register on site. Everyone is welcome.
Okay.
And our survivors are treated top-notch treatment.
Like the queens that we are.
Yes, yes. You have a cafe if you come early with your family, and you have special seating during the ceremonies, and just treat it well.
Okay. So everything starts at 8. What time should people actually get there?
You should get there early. It's best to get there early. 7 o'clock is when the streets start to be closed down by the security, the police, so that we can secure the race route. So it's best to get down there probably beforehand to find parking and, of course, to visit all of the wonderful exhibits. We have tons of fabulous sponsors who bring lots of nice goodies to hand out. Of course, Panera will be there handing out bagels. There's all kinds of things to do before the race actually gets up and running. And, of course, to be there for the opening ceremony.
Okay.
And they're all free. People like free things.
Yes.
Free
things.
Okay. Sounds wonderful. And just to translate, 5K is approximately 3 miles.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Yes. And, of course, if you're not really into walking but you do want to participate, there is a 1 mile walk option.
Oh, okay.
For those who aren't big on walking as well.
All right. Are you looking for volunteers at this point?
Yes. I will admit, you know, since we're so close to the race date, there's probably very few opportunities, but that is available on our website. And people who are interested in volunteering can explore our website, again, www.carmanis.org/Detroit Race for the Cure. And click the Volunteer Now button and just look and see which jobs are available. We have something for everybody who is interested in volunteering. And we just have the best volunteers come up on race and throughout the year that come and work in our office. And we're just very grateful to have them because without them, we could not do what we do.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people involved behind the scene. Definitely. Okay. We're going to take a little break for some important messages right here. And I will remind you, you are listening to Impact on WHFR Dearborn. And this is the show on the second Tuesday of the month from 1 until 2 p.m., which emphasizes individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community.
Did you have a hot flash?
You can give any skill you have.
Just imagine how strong a society we could be.
This is Barack Obama. Every one of us has a role to play in making our communities and our country stronger. Discover yours. Help us continue to make a difference in the life of our nation. Go to serve.gov and find the opportunity that works for you. And this message is brought to you by the Corporation for National and Community Service.
Now my money's gone. Whew, and it's so long, Johnny, bye-bye.
Let's declare an International Blues Music Day. Hi, my name is Johnny Childs, blues musician and president of the New York City Blues Society. To support this great cause, please join our Facebook group called Petition to Declare an International Blues Music Day. Join the discussion and let's create a formal day to celebrate blues music. From its legends and pioneers in the U.S. to the continually evolving pool of modern-day blues artists around the world. Let's celebrate our love for this great American art form and bring more recognition and support to blues music for many generations to come. Find our Facebook group called Petition to Declare an International Blues Music Day. This is Johnny Child saying thank you for supporting the blues.
Once again, the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market returns to bring in support of local farmers and entrepreneurs right to the heart of Dearborn. Beginning May the 25th, over 30 Michigan vendors will be selling some of the finest seasonal products, from produce goods and flowers to garden art and woodworkings. This will also mark additional times for the market. Tuesday evenings, June 19th, July 17th, and August the 21st. The Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market will be open every Friday starting May the 25th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and is located on West Michigan Avenue between Mason and Howard. For more information about the market, including special Tuesday hours, check out DearbornFarmersArtisansMarket.com.
Where do you hear the best of female artists from all different genres? Right here on WHFR. When do you hear the best of female artists from all different genres? From noon until 2 p.m. every Saturday afternoon. Who brings you the best of female artists from all different genres? Your host, Lynn. That's me. So tune in every Saturday from noon till 2 p.m. for No Boys Allowed and hear the best of female artists from all different genres. Right here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves at 89.3 on your FM dial.
Thank you.
Okay, and we are back. Thanks again to Regina Carter for that wonderful musical interlude, one of Detroit's favorites. And again, ladies, thank you so much for coming in. Got lots of stuff happening this weekend. Lisa, you're going to be a busy lady.
Yes. I'm already a busy lady.
Tell us again about Race for the Cure, which is when and when should people be there? And
yes, the Komen Detroit Race for the Cure will be this Saturday, May the 26th at Comerica Park. Opening ceremonies will begin at 8 a.m. sharp, with the race beginning at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
It's best to get down there early, guys.
Okay. And early 6?
Early.
Is not too early?
That
6, 7?
Certainly not too early.
Okay.
We definitely want to encourage everyone to get down there probably before 7 o'clock to find parking, because mm-hmm. 7 is the time when the street will close off. And,
okay.
of course, there's still time to register online until tomorrow at 6 o'clock. You can register as an individual. There are several one-stop registration locations located throughout metropolitan Detroit, and I encourage everyone to just check our website, mm-hmm. www.carmanis.org/Detroit Race for the Cure for all of those locations. And of course, if you want to, you can register on site at the race.
Okay. And you're looking for participants and volunteers still
at
this point.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for, you know, spreading the word there. Okay. And my BCCCP ladies.
Well, I'd just like to give you the number. The number, once again, is 888-242-2702.
Okay.
And you can call that number. We can take a little information from you, get you all scheduled and set up for an appointment. We have over 31 providers. We try to send you as close to home as possible. All the major hospitals are our providers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, call 888-242-2702. All the major hospitals are a part of this program. You can even go down to Carmanis Cancer Treatment for your mammogram.
Okay.
This is a free women's health screening. So there's no more excuses, no more barriers. We got you covered, so you got to call that number, 888-242-2702.
What if they're not in the target age group? Because we had talked about some of the younger women with cancer situations and some of the older women who've been diagnosed in their 70s and 80s.
Well, we have several resources in addition through the Race for the Cure. All of the money that gets raised through sponsorships, through donations, through registration fees from the Race for the Cure, 25% of those net proceeds are, of course, designated to breast cancer research.
Mm-hmm.
But the remaining 75% stays here locally in our service area of Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County. And every year, nonprofit organizations have the opportunity to apply for community grants to fund their breast cancer programs for screening, treatments, and education. Of course, the Breast and Cervical Cancer Control Program for Wayne County has been fortunate enough to be awarded one of those grants over the last several years. But in addition to that, we have grantees throughout the metropolitan Detroit area that are able to help women who need those types of services if they're under the age of 40.
And you mentioned early on, we're probably looking at 250,000 women in this area,
right,
who need this sort of service. One of the things that always makes this, and we all touched on this earlier, is the personal connection, the stories. Any parting stories you'd like to share? I know you told me, you told the audience about your own experiences and that sort of thing, but any stories, possibly humorous stories about other people or being involved with the BCCP?
Well, I can share one with you.
Okay.
Just like I told before. Four, we set up at local stores and Walmart, Kmart, and I was at this one particular grocery store, and I was telling the lady about the program, and she says, well, I have a lump. I said, well, you're just, you know, what we were looking for. Let me take a little information from you, you know, so we can get you all scheduled for your mammogram. And she said, well, no, I want to show you. And she just plopped her breast out right in the produce. I said, oh, put it back. I said, I don't need to see this. She said, no, but I want you to see it. She actually took her, laid the breast out and just insisted that I feel the lump.
Did you tell her you're not a doctor?
I told her I'm not a doctor, but I felt the lump. That was the only way she was going to put it back.
Okay.
And they look around, too. We say we're offering free mammograms and pap. They go, where? Today? Where? So we, not here. Not here. Not at the grocery store. Not at Walmart. Walmart's good, but not down at Walmart.
Oh, my gosh. How many, where is your next presentation or presence, I guess I should say? Where can people find you if they'd like to check you out in person?
Our schedule varies. We're everywhere. we couldn't even tell you half the time. We'll pop up any place you'll see us.
Okay.
Health fairs, some church events.
All of your local Walmarts.
Okay.
Yeah, you can find us there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
They will, of course, be at the race this weekend.
And the grocery store.
And the grocery stores, right.
Then okay. One quick fact. Did you tell them how many women we found last year through our program?
It's over 7,000 women was it diagnosed?
No, 73.
Or 73, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of going through the grant reports mm-hmm. in my mind.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But their program has been very successful in terms of reaching mm-hmm. Women in Wayne County. I can definitely say that in terms of the number of women that have enrolled in the program, mm-hmm. We're talking over 8,000 women, and was it 73?
73.
73 of them were found to have a breast cancer.
Wow.
54 of those women, of course, had an invasive breast cancer, which means that it was spread beyond mm-hmm. The initial starting point. And, of course, there was 18 of those women who were diagnosed at a very, very early stage of the disease. So, of course, this program, as we stated very early on in the program, is key to early detection. Mm-hmm. And it's saving lives, getting women the access not just to the screening but to the treatment that mm-hmm. they need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as a follow-up, Ellery, were you able to set up an appointment for this lady?
She got screened and everything, okay. and she did have breast cancer.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, she
okay.
did.
How did she do? Do you know?
She turned out very well.
Oh,
very
fantastic.
Well.
Okay, very well. So you saved a number of lives last year, and that's what it's all about, yes. Right? Okay.
And I have another story. At the same place, the same particular market, there was, I set up there every month, and a couple months, I didn't go. And when I went in, the manager of the store, she said, there's a guy that's been coming in here looking for you. Where is that lady? And I told Barbara, when you're out in the community, every now and then you meet some little flakes, I should say, people. So I was kind of apprehensive about going back to the store. So I went, and here come this guy. He said, I've been looking for you. Where have you been? I said, well, I don't come here. He said, I just want to thank you. You saved my mom's life.
Wow.
And when you get... That is just heartwarming that he was just looking for me just to thank me because I signed his mom up and she was diagnosed with breast cancer in the early stages and she's doing great.
Fantastic.
He said he would come every month looking for me.
Oh, that's terrific. And very, very briefly, we're almost out of time, but breast cancer is not restricted just to females.
Yes, that's very true.
Are you doing anything with regards to male screening?
Well, in terms of the screening guidelines for men, they're not necessarily as stringent or as emphasized or as structured, I guess, mm-hmm. as the guidelines for women, with the regular mammograms at age 40 and the clinical breast exams. For men, we encourage men to just really recognize changes in their body, particularly in that area. Of course, they discover that there is some kind of a lump or a thickening or something like that. We encourage them, of course, to get checked out by their doctor. And, of course, if there's any change to that area, mm-hmm. let your doctor know immediately, as in if you were to notice a change in any other area of your body.
Right.
Like you said, it's not something that's as common in
right.
men.
Right.
About 1% of breast cancer cases are found in men. But it is important for them to recognize the changes in their bodies, like we tell all women
right.
in terms of breast cancer. They don't necessarily have a mammogram schedule like we tell women to get that mammogram beginning at age 40.
Right.
But, of course, recognize those changes in mm-hmm. your body and immediately tell your doctor.
Okay. Ladies, thank you so, so much for coming in. And if you will give us that telephone number one more time and tell us about the Breast and Cervical Cancer Control Program.
888 888- 242-2702.
Okay, and Carmanos?
Carmanos is the administrator of the fund, so you know every dime's going to the right place.
Yes, and of course you can get in touch with Carmanos at 1-800-CARMANOS, mm-hmm. and visit the Race for the Cure website at www.carmanos.org/Detroit Race for the Cure.
Okay. Thank you. And again, this is Lynn, your host of Impact, and we're here on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 1 p.m. until 2 p.m., bringing you guests from the community, individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. Thank you again. And thanks, Mike, for the engineering.
Thank you.
Thank you.